Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Audible is the home of storytelling, from audiobooks across every genre to all your favorite podcasts and exclusive Audible originals. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Audible is the destination for thrilling audiobooks with highly anticipated new releases and next listen recommendations to pique your curiosity and sense of mystery. Best-selling titles like First Lie Wins, or the upcoming Stephen King novel, You Like It Darker. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/built or text BUILT to 500-500. That's audible.com/built or text BUILT to 500-500. The spirit of performance is what defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com. C4 Smart Energy is a proud sponsor of How I Built This. It's harder to focus than ever these days. Thankfully, C4 has reinvented the energy drink game with C4 Smart Energy, the only energy drink clinically proven to provide enhanced mental focus. Containing 200 milligrams of natural caffeine, a blend of vitamins, and zero sugar, it was formulated to support your well-being and help you feel your best, all while enhancing mental focus. They taste great, and they really work, especially after hours of interviews when I'm mentally exhausted, and I need a boost to help me get my focus back. From your brain to your body, C4 Smart Energy does it all and tastes amazing. Find Smart Energy at your local Target, in the Check Lane cooler, and where you find energy drinks. C4 Smart Energy. Stay focused. Hey, everyone. Just wanted to let you know that I had such an amazing conversation a few weeks ago with the co-founders of Riot Games that we actually couldn't squeeze it all into the main interview. So today, we have a bonus for you. It's my short conversation with Mark Merrill and Brandon Beck about how video games and digital technology are transforming the way we live for good, for bad, and in ways we don't quite understand. And they both have some really interesting insights about all of that. Now, of course, the main episode for Riot Games is also in your queue, but if you want to listen to this bonus episode first, go right ahead, and however you decide to do it, enjoy. Do you guys have kids yet?
Yeah, we both do.
Yeah.
Okay. Are they little kids?
I've got 6, 4, and 2, and Mark has...
7 and 6.
7 and 6, yeah.
Yep.
Are you guys... I mean, we are very restrictive with screens. It's very hard, and our kids fight us on this all the time. But you guys work in the screen world. Are you restrictive on screens?
Big time.
Yeah. We are very restrictive.
Yeah, we have no screen time during the week without like very special exceptions. And then during the weekends, you know, now that they're older, we do a little bit more, but you know, it's like 2 hours a day max.
They're not like, Dad, you invented League of Legends. Like, are you kidding me? I can't play a video game?
No, they try that. You know, now that my son's 7 and, you know, he actually really, really enjoys video games too. It's fascinating. And he, you know, he does try to use that against me. Like, you're in front of the computer all day, you know, excuse me, working, you know, down in my office or whatnot. Why can't I?
Yeah.
And, you know, we essentially just explain why it's important to be bored. Boredom is critical for creativity and problem solving. Because when you're bored, that then you go, oh, I'm going to go pick up the stick and it's actually a sword. And whereas if you always default to the path of least resistance, where I can just grab the iPhone and instantly go play Ball Stars for hours, you know, that can have negative cognitive development and social development on the kids' implications.
I agree 1,000%. And by the way, this is why in my house we have no screen Saturdays. That's the day we chose. Friday night, all of our screens go into a locked cabinet, including mine and my wife's, and we don't even use our phones. So we are back in the 80s.
Cool.
We have physical maps. Actually, our car has GPS, so we do use that. But we still do use maps sometimes. If we get to a restaurant, it's closed, and we didn't call ahead, we move on. like that's our Saturday. So we do that to force ourselves to be bored. But, you know, it's a problem. Like the world that you guys have helped to create, and I'm not trying to shame you. I'm just saying the world that you've been part of and helping to create is a world where there is no boredom. And that is a really big problem. You know, I mean, do you ever think about that?
We do, yeah. I mean, go ahead, B.
I was just going to say, I mean, obviously, think about it in the context of our own kids who, you know, who we want to engage in that same kind of unstructured play that, you know, we had a lot of opportunity. And yeah, because I do think that without boredom, with constant stimulation, like we just, as a society, we don't know what that does yet, you know? Does it change have you contemplated as much? Have you been in your head as much, you know, as you grow up? And, you know, what are you, if not, what are you missing and what do you lose? I think we're at the very beginnings of understanding, you know, what it means.
Yeah.
Well, and just to add to that, everybody's still figuring out what are the right ways to govern this new virtual landscape. And so, you know, how much should governments regulate and what types of content and what's appropriate? How much self-policing or moderation or content should happen on various platforms? You know, how should we help try to nurture, you know, positive communities? And I think it's a really interesting challenge and really interesting problem. And we've spent a lot of time thinking about that, whether it's, you know, how we try to foster sportsmanship, to parental controls, to thinking about the types of content we create. I mean, there's just a lot of complexity.
You know, I remember I went to a TED conference a couple years ago, and the founder of Twitch, one of the founders of Twitch, spoke at the conference, and he said something that really bothered me in his TED talk. You can find it online. He said that Twitch is like the new campfire. It's actually bringing communities and people together. And I just thought, if that's the world we're going to live in, where everyone's connecting through using Discord and Twitch, and, you know, that's not a world I'm looking forward to. Like, that is not the campfire. Like, humans need to be together. And that really worries me. Now, maybe I'm a tinfoil lunatic here on this. Maybe everyone listening is like, you're just I just can't believe that that's the new campfire. I don't want to believe that. I don't know. Do you guys think that that's what you know, sitting around and playing massive multiplayer online games should be the new campfire?
So I think it's a new type of campfire, but I don't think it replaces social interaction in a physical space. But I think, you know, it also depends on who you are, right? And so as an example, if you have a, you know, physical disability, right, that could be pretty debilitating, all of a sudden, right, if you can engage in some of these online worlds or virtual games or whatnot, you can now have a, you know, to a certain extent, many people have reported a better quality of life in terms of forging social relationships and, you know, deeply meaningful connections to people. You know, to Brandon's point earlier, like I personally have made friendships that are going to be lifelong from playing MMOs. So like I went to a friend's wedding outside of London in the English countryside because I played EverQuest with him and brought my wife, and we got to go hang out with his awesome English family. And that was really cool. And it's because we know each other so well, because we spend a lot of time online, you know? And so a lot of what players love to do online is just another way of connecting. Like if you graduate high school and you go off to college, you can stay more connected to a lot of your friends by doing some activities online, and that's positive. And then you can come back, of course, and see each other, you know, in person. Or you can go to an esports event or, you know, another physical event also where you get together with other people who love the thing that you like also, and there's a positivity there too.
This could be a whole separate episode, but I will just say one thing, which is with every technology, there are incredible benefits. YouTube, right, like has amazing videos, just unbelievable videos. And Facebook connects people who have lost touch. And Twitter can be an incredible source of information. I'm in Northern California during wildfires. It's wonderful. But there's a flip side to it, which is there's also a lot of really bad behavior. I guess you could say, well, there's a lot of bad behavior in the public square too, right? But when people can be anonymous behind a screen, they feel safer to be more cruel or more destructive in their behavior. And I just think that's really sad. It really bothers me.
Well, we've thought about this a lot and studied it and built teams that have tried to really cultivate a positive community. And it's a really complex problem. But I think Brandon and I both agree with the dynamic you're describing, where there is definitely a major downside to a lot of this technology and this connectivity. And I think it's incumbent upon all of us as business leaders, technology leaders, community leaders, our government, to help figure out how do we create a new structure around human interaction in virtual environments to make it better in a lot of ways and to reduce and mitigate the harm. And I'll give you an example, but to a certain extent, like you mentioned around the campfire on Twitch or whatnot, or on Twitter, it's like having, if you go to a football game at the Coliseum, right, American football game, there could be 100,000 people screaming and watching an event or a match happening. But now 100% of the conversations or the words that somebody is saying in that stadium as a fan is now permanently recorded. And not only that, can be directly sent to that player that maybe you'd yell at and be like, oh, you get disappointed if somebody drops a pass. Or, oh, that guy sucks or something. Now the tweet, when somebody says that, goes to that person and they're going to see it. Whereas in general, somebody may just say that in passing, in the stadium, be like, oh, that player. But then if they go see that player at a bar, they'd be thrilled to be like, oh my gosh, what's up? And so a lot of times I think technology makes it feel worse than what they actually intend, because in a moment of weakness or a moment of emotion, somebody has an outburst and the other person that's receiving that doesn't actually know that that's the case. And we've studied this where, we built this player behavior team, and about 40% of League of Legends players will never be mean to somebody else in a game. They're just always cool. And then about less than 1% of players, literally less than 1%, will be total jerks that just try to go ruin the game a lot of the time for other people. And it's easy for us. So we go, well, let's just ban those people, right? Whenever we find them and try to build better detection mechanisms to help keep our community clean. But then the remainder, which is, close to 60% of the population, that's everybody, or that other group, sometimes has a bad day and sometimes they can be rude to somebody. And what we found is when we're able to build automated feedback tools that jump up and tell them, hey, you've been reported, or this is negative that your behavior just did, 70% of our players that receive these warnings and this feedback continue to play the game and never get those warnings again. So we can find ways to help train people to be more aware of their behavior, right? In a similar way to, if you think about Little League sports, people learn how to be, humble in victory and gracious in defeat because they have coaches and all that. That infrastructure and societal infrastructure to help people learn how to behave in a civil manner, it doesn't exist yet, right? We're building this stuff incrementally. But we need it in order to not have mental illness rates continue to climb and, all the negative things that you're seeing.
That's Mark Merrill and Brandon Beck, the co-founders of Riot Games. To hear the whole story of how the company was founded, just look in your podcast queue. The full episode should be right there. And thanks, as always, for listening.
In the climate-ravaged year of 2072, the city of Pura stands as a miraculous green haven, a geoengineered paradise that protects fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. Demetria Lopez heads up Pura's public relations, tirelessly promoting the city's idyllic image. But when she stumbles upon a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Pura's existence, she must decide who and what she is willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Rhea Seehorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Back in the 90s, Pepsi and Coca-Cola were in a heated race to try and win loyal customers by any means necessary. But when Pepsi launched an ambitious promotion that encouraged people to buy Pepsi and redeem points for prizes, they overlooked their own fine print in a major way. I'm Misha Brown, and I'm the host of Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop. Every week, guests join me to chronicle one of the biggest pop culture fails of all time. Like, who at Pepsi thought it would be a good idea to advertise that people could earn enough points to redeem a military jet as a prize? They never imagined somebody might actually try to snag it. But a 23-year-old did, and suddenly, Pepsi owed him a jet. Follow The Big Flop on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Big Flop early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.